And welcome to the Rock and Roll Survivors Podcast, dedicated to those in front of the curtain, behind the curtain, and somewhere in between. So let's get started. Patty Quatro, I so loved hearing your personal take on your own first original song with the Pleasure Seekers, Elevator Express, and what you wanted us to hear and what you wanted us to listen for. I thought it was fantastic.
Oh, I still love that early song as to the elements of it. It was so fun to do a music class 101 for the audience. And from my own personal POV perspective of these beginning elements in it.
Well, you can hold class anytime you want, and we love being your students. I mean, even if people have heard the song before, it was so cool to let you tell us about it. I mean, yeah. Come on, from the horse's mouth, even though you're a gorgeous horse. So, and we're definitely going to be talking in depth about your other original song by the Pleasure Seekers that you recorded on October 30th, 1968 at Pioneer Studios in Detroit. And that's Gotta Get Away. But before we talk about it, we mentioned in the previous episode that you were now booked at the nightclub Arthur in Detroit, that it opened a franchise in the Motor City, and it was near the Motown offices, you told us, and so therefore it drew a large swath of musical genre to it, including your homeboys, including the Pleasure Seekers. So just briefly remind us of what a typical night playing at the club would look like while in Detroit, and then tell us about Halloween at Arthur.
Oh, it was fabulous. It was such a hot spot when it opened. It drew a lot of people. And Motown being so close, they would come over there too, you know? So it was like a cool mixture of the homeboy bands and Motown people. And we would do, it was an easy gig. We would do 5 half-hour sets with a half-hour DJ music in between each one. And then we got to hit the dance floor ourselves and dance our full heads off at the end of the night. We would quickly change and get out on the floor. We were having a ball.
Love it.
Halloween party was hilarious. Everyone dressed up, even the waiters. I was a flapper. Arlene was a cavewoman in our leopard costume. Darlene was a bum. Susie was a granny, and she bent over all night like an old woman, like creeping around. I mean, it was so funny. She did it even on stage. And Pammy was a Spanish flamenco girl. It was truly a fun, festive party blast.
Oh, I love it. I love the imagery, and I so wish we had pictures, but I actually can imagine it. I love it. Well, again, this was Halloween, 1968, and only a handful of days later, on November 4th, Arthur, the club, had what was called a jam night or a celebrity night. And it was also during this time that I want to remind our listeners of your record producer previous, Dick Corby. And he was the talent scout who saw you at Trudy's in New York. He produced your first singles on Mercury, Light of Love and Good Kind of Hurt. And he ended up leaving Mercury when Phillips took over. So he didn't necessarily leave because you and the band decided to leave Mercury. It just happened almost simultaneously. And it
Right.
was Dick Corby and Pat O'Day, a reminder, your musical guru from the Pacific Northwest. Both of them were trying to now get you on a new record label. So tell us about Dick. Tell us about this celebrity night at Arthur on November 4th and anything else you want to tell us.
Okay, well, Dick Corby came in, and both he and Pat O'Day were still trying to help us with labels. So Stax was there, Warner Brothers, Capitol, and ABC Records, not our booking agency, were also there. I'm sure it was a mix of Motown sending labels for, the jam thing, and also Corby and O'Day. There's no way to be sure who was there for which person, because it was a hot spot that day. November 4th, celebrity night, and it was quite a big deal. Everybody mixing, it was a packed club. Pleasure Seekers were the backup band for all the celebrities to set in with us. Picture it. David Ruffin of the Temptations and Susie sing a song. And David said we were the best backing band he ever played with. Not too shabby, eh?
Oh.
I know the songs we did with various artists were Knock on Wood, Money, Respect, Hold On, I'm Coming, Funky Broadway, Gino is a Coward, La 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 means I love you. And even John Drake from the Amboy Dukes sat in on a song. It was a very hip crowd. And there were other people that sat in too. David Ruffin is the one that stands in my mind. But my God, how can you beat the Pleasure Seekers backing up and performing with these amazing Motown artists? It was quite exciting. And I've said this before, many bands have covered Motown songs, especially the girl bands. They would do a lot of Motown, but we lived it. Here we were, Motown girls, actually performing with the Motown artists and a rock band to boot. Wow.
Wow is right. And of course, you're going to remember David Ruffin and backing him up and all the other artists. But I just really want to underscore the fact that David Ruffin said to you that you were the best backup band he had ever worked with. Ain't too shabby, my dear.
Exactly. Oh, man, what a compliment.
What a compliment. You've given me chills. Well, it was also during this time period in early November in Detroit that you took these fabulous outdoor PR photos. I'm sure our listeners have seen them. We will post them again. They're the great Technicolor photos of all of you sitting at a picnic table or standing near a tree or running over a field. And these are so different for you. Well, first of all, they're color. A lot of your press was in black and white, so there's that. But also, there's an independence that you've been talking about, Patty, that's now coming through in this photo shoot. So tell us about it, but also, do you remember where you did this photo shoot and do you remember who photographed you?
No, it was at a local park. We had so many parks in Detroit, and probably Leo took the shots at that point. We just decided to do a different kind of shoot, sort of goofing around in more trendy, more hippie, natural clothing. It was a lot of fun. We were still doing Lily's costumes, yet we definitely were growing more independent and staying with the culture shifts we saw. So that's what we decided to do. Let's just do some fun shots, new ones.
Well, you definitely delivered on those. They're, again, they remain some of my favorites. And Patty, tell me if I'm wrong on this, but it's interesting to me to think about that this new PR group of shots that you did in your own clothing with your own kind of attitude and style may have been the first photo shoot that you did after your own outfits when you did that first PR shot in your convertible car in 1964 or looking over your shoulders. You
Yes.
said that those were your own outfits. You put those together, whereas everything after that was more for PR and putting you out there. So I just think it's great that in a way you're coming full circle even with your wardrobe. So
Yes.
there is an upcoming gig that the Pleasure Seekers had in Canada, or gigs, I should say, plural. But before you tell us about this one particular gig, I do want to recap something that we have been talking about for the last few episodes, but I think it's important to remind our listeners what's going on personally throughout these many months. So Leo Fenn, the band's manager, and Arlene, your older sister and bandmate, the organist, were married, and they had been together since high school. They had three small kids, and now they were tied together to the band in instrumental ways. And so yet they had not been doing well for a long time. And you had said to us, Patty, that they kept it not a secret, but they were very good at separating it from issues with the band. And yet now they're not doing well and they're not able to keep it together. And for anybody who has been in a committed relationship knows, especially with young children, the dissolving of a marriage can take a long and painful time. And so, why don't you recap a little bit about what was going on before we get to this next gig in Canada?
Okay, yes, very sadly. The marriage was coming apart and coming to a head for my sister, Arlene, and my loved brother-in-law and our manager, Leo. Despite them working on it, the writing was slowly on the wall through all this time. And it was a really rough time to navigate with three children. My God, Leo was very Catholic and wanted to save it. And Arlene had come to feel that her love had evolved into a brother love instead of a lover, you know. So it was very tense privately, and they did keep it very private. And of course, the band felt it. We were all concerned what would happen with their marriage. Ugh.
Well, I want to pick up on that for one second before we get to another part of this, which is, of course, you're concerned about Leo and Arlene and their marriage. But did it ever cross your mind? And I realize this may sound a little cold, but did it ever cross your mind of what would that do to the band?
Of course. Leo was at that point no longer part of our constant gigging. The shift was very hard on all of us. Anything you want to underscore how new and hard it was for Leo not to be there like he had been before. This is it. Yeah, it was a little weird for us to think about that changing and,
Right.
to.
Well, you just mentioned something that I actually want to get to now, which is the other part of this larger narrative, which will again lead us to your Canada story, is exactly what you just said. And we talked about Sharon Cassidy, the teen writer from the Detroit News on the previous episode. And one of the things we quoted her saying, which I think in the context now of this dissolving marriage and Leo being your band manager and Arlene being a bandmate and your sister and family and all of that, is that Cassidy writes in that article, quote, "Girls also need a man with them at all times for protection. In the Pleasure Seekers case, the man who fills the bill is Leo Fenn, Arlene's husband," close quote. However, now what you're saying, Patty, is it's not just a dissolving marriage, but now he's not going on tour with you. He had been your protector. He wasn't just your manager. So I would like you to talk about this and then tell us what happens next while you're on these gigs in Canada.
Well, it definitely was tense with them, but it was better for them and us for him not to be on the road any longer and feel that tenseness. So he stayed home and worked with my brother, Mike Quattro, to book, and he took care of us completely. Everything was smooth. All the band business was taken care of, and he also watched the kids at home while Arlene had to be on the road. So we had a male roadie with us, but it was still a bit strange. not to have that strong male influence with us any longer. And we just had to deal with it. And we had a couple gigs in Canada. So, not a huge big tour, but one in Nova Scotia where we had to take a boat. And yet another scary trip. Oh my God, this always happens with us. The boat nearly capsized on rough water as we crossed. I mean, geez, what next? We seem to attract some hairy scary on our road drives. And then the other gig, oh my gosh, in Galt, Ontario, or nearby that city where we stayed, we pulled in and stayed overnight in a hotel with quite a harrowing experience. Picture it. We pull into this one main street type of town, dark and dreary night. All we want to do is get hotel rooms and sleep. And as we're driving in, it's a pretty eerie looking town, real quiet, no one on the streets. It felt weirdly deserted. The only hotel was like something out of the movie Psycho. You remember that movie? It faced the corner and really creepy looking. We arrive, it was the only place we could get to. We arrive and book three rooms. Susie and Arlene shared one, rest of us in one in the roadie room. The rooms aren't close to each other, they're just wherever they can put us, And now what happened was not known to the rest of us until the next morning. So here we are in Susie and Arlene's room, right? Comes a knock at the door. Knock, knock. They ask, "Who is it?" No answer at all. Susie gets on a chair and looks through the top transom window to see who it is. I mean, it's real dark in the hallways, even. All she sees are two shoes in the shadows. Susie screams and falls backwards. The man says while he's laughing, "Screaming ain't gonna do you any good, honey." Yeah, they are freaked out all night and scared as hell. So we.
Wait, before you go on, is he just outside the door? Does he leave? Does he continue to knock?
No, he just stands there. He just stands there. They didn't look again. They weren't going to get on the chair again. They were freaked out. They didn't say a word. And the phones weren't working where they could call us or anything. I don't even know if there were phones in the room. But anyway, the next morning, we go to the desk, pay our bill and all that. And the cashier looks at us and said, we bitch about it, what happened. And the cashier simply says, "You should have let him in. It's good money." Apparently, we had inadvertently booked into a prostitute hotel. Might I say, we got out of town damn fast.
Oh my God. How did you figure out it was a prostitute hotel just by that comment?
Yes, by the comment, you should have let him in. Well, obviously, they had shit going on there.
Oh my God. And I love the idea of a psycho hotel from the movie. I mean, it just adds to the intenseness of it. I would have been freaking out too. That would have scared me. And I love that the phones didn't work. That's just like the perfect scary touch.
It was
Oh
awful.
my
Oh my
goodness. Well,
God.
that is why you did need Leo on the road with you.
I mean, always and something always going on, and Leo was our panty raid guy, but this was a little more serious than panty raid time.
Yes, although as a reminder, you did have a hotel owner try to break into your room. So, I mean, you have had some harrowing tales.
Yes. Oh,
Oh,
boy.
Patty, well, there is still so much going on with the band on multiple levels, as we've been talking about. And now, as we know, personal and professional issues. I mean, you're gigging everywhere, you're still gaining popularity, you still have these singles, but now these real life scenarios are without a man to protect you. And so it's with this backdrop of personal and professional issues going on internally, externally, that I want you to talk now about the second original song that the Pleasure Seekers wrote called Gotta Get Away. So let's just set the stage and have you, Patty, start with the lyrics of the song that Susie wrote, by the way.
Yes. Okay. I call it the mirror song because it has great personal reflection on what was going on. And it's interesting that that's what we wrote first. So it starts out with the chorus, "Hey, gotta get away," over and over. And then Susie says with attitude, "You gotta listen to me, baby, because here's where it's at." And then the verse, "I don't understand what you're doing to me. I feel your loving all over me. You're turning me, baby, every way but loose. Can't you see, baby? It just ain't no use. And then the chorus again. Now here's the second verse. You stole my heart, took my feelings away. Now I need your loving all night and day. Gotta learn to do without you by my side. Get a hold of myself. Get a hold of my pride. And then we sing the chorus. And then there's like what I call like a crying line, almost for help, you know, because Arlene comes in and we sing, gotta run, gotta hide, gotta run, gotta hide. And then the lead comes in. And then after that, we just do the chorus again. So it's a shorter song for that first one that we wrote.
Well, this is very different, not to state the obvious, than your other original song, Elevator Express. Because what you're saying, at least from, and I want you to talk more about this, but these lyrics feel more like love gone wrong or love not going in the direction that she, in this case, wanted, versus Elevator Express was more of an empowering anthem of determination, drive, grit to make it, whether personally or the whole band. And so why don't you talk a little bit about these differences between the lyrics? You said they had less verses, it was not as complex, but talk about it.
Well, it's important to note that we wrote this more simplistic two-verse short song first as to what we were feeling at that moment. So it was obviously in our heads what was going on. And then right after that, what does Pleasure Seekers do? Of course, we get back to the mission and we write Elevator Express with meatier lyrics and more elements. We were right back to it. So the simple one, this Gotta Get Away, was more a bit of a departure for us in our first song.
Well, it was a departure, but it was also clearly personal and needed to be expressed, in this case, not on an elevator, but with love. And so I could conjecture, because of our conversations, about the content of the lyrics. But as a reminder, there were other personal issues going on in the band. It wasn't just Arlene and Leo, let's say, but a reminder that Susie was involved with a much older married man, an A&R man in the biz. And so I'm curious, and I'm not trying to be gossipy here, were these lyrics written about her situation with this older married man?
I believe so. It's interesting how we start with the chorus and Susie says right away, you got to listen to me because that's where it's at. Like wanting her guy to hear how she's feeling. I felt it was very Susie, those words. However, like you've said, both Arlene and her were so resonating with the lyrics because I mean, Susie, it was a married man, for God's sakes. An important reminder, Kristen, that original songs Susie had sung up till now have always been about this tough girl who could survive on her own. And now suddenly she's under the spell of a married man when it came to love and her independence. Same with Arlene and Leo. All in the relationships, but conflicted. And what do? Susie's feeling the pressures, and Leo won't let Arlene go. As it goes on, you hear frustration in the lyrics and whether to pull away and find strength and pride, as the lyric will say. It's all the lyric, clearly, to me. They both felt they had to get away, and they were both full of angst.
Wow. So I'm curious, understanding all of this as a sister, you, Patty, and as a band leader. I'm curious, did these lyrics resonate with you personally at all? Were you having anything personal in terms of your own issues with love? I mean, you obviously cared about your sisters and their pain, but what about you?
Nope, I had no stresses going on myself. I was more, as usual, focused on the music and the vocals. So I was happy with what we ended up putting into it. I concentrated on that. I loved what Arlene put in, even in her angst. She puts a run in the beginning. It starts with this hard sound, one note, and then it blows up into the vibrato. So it excites it to when we come in with Gotta Get Away. So that's how it starts, pretty exciting. It wasn't like a 96 Tears kind of sound, but it was her own unique sound because she did this way of doing it with the little run. Cool way of doing the entrance, then the run to the chorus, and we start the song, and Susie sang it, and with a strong vocal attitude. She made it hers, definitely. And I liked the way we alternated doing harmony repeats of the title or joining Susie on the end of a verse in harmony. You know, some of that quattro harmony flavor. And then you're going to hear the defining vocal line up to the guitar lead with the organ supporting it. Gotta run, gotta hide, gotta run, gotta hide. And it gets louder and louder. It's a bit of a cry to me. It's like they're taking stock of themselves, you know, with that line. It's hiding. I mean, wow. I also love the hook line of the vocals escalating to that lead guitar with the organ following it. It just escalated it, you know. That's it.
Well,
it. Yeah.
That's amazing. I have some things I'd like to say, but what I want all of us to do is let's listen to Gotta Get Away with your intentions behind it. Let's listen to the music and the arrangement. And thank you, Professor Pat, for this next musical lesson. So here's Gotta Get Away. Patty, I love this song a lot, and I think I love it more because of the background that you talked about with all the personal issues. And I everything you said, I listened to, but I also, and I love the vocal runs, by the way, that you talked about. But
yeah.
Your lead, my dear, is fantastic. It really is. It is so cool and hip when you get to that lead, and it's just so psychedelic, and I love it. And I think Dara's drums on this are very tasty. I think she did a really good job of really... I don't know, supporting that toughness behind Gotta Get Away. And you said something again about Susie's delivery with all of her songs.
Mm-hmm.
I think Susie made this so unique because Gotta Get Away, Gotta Hide, Gotta Run, that if she had sung that as more of a little girl voice or as a little bit softer, these lyrics could be read as My Heart Is Breaking. And I don't think you're going to read it in any other way, but I love her tough facade to it. It really does. She is still very much...
Yeah.
Tough Susie. And so we've listened to it now. Do you have any additional thoughts after hearing it again here with everything we've been discussing? Does it bring back memories for you of what you were going through with the pleasure seekers, Arlene, Leo, Susie, her married man, or anything else?
It does. It does. Well, of course, I felt the pain and hurt that love can cause, and the Gotta Get Away lyrics really express that for both of them. I mean, they were Susie's words, but resonated with both of them. Of course, it was quite hard on all of us, not just me. Even if I didn't have any specific personal issues going on, it was hard to watch them suffering, you know, quietly themselves. Susie with her married man and concerns for her pride and what's going to happen here. And Arlene and Leo close to calling it quits for good. It was hard on all of us.
Oh, I can only imagine how difficult this must have been for all of you, including the kids, including your parents, everyone, your other band members. I mean, everybody had grown really fond of Leo, not only
Oh, my
as your
goodness.
manager, but as a guy, as a great influence, and he really helped you out. And so at this same time, which is amazing to me, we're still in November 1968.
Yeah.
Regardless of all of these issues, you were still determined to make it and prove yourselves as an all-girl rock and roll band. So, personal issues aside, as much as you could do that, you're now without Leo's protections at gigs, as you said, but he is still managing you, as
Yes.
you said. So, the week ending November 7th, 1968, so you've just come back from Canada, Leo has a lengthy conversation with Peter Asher, no less, of Peter and Gordon, an executive at Apple Records. And Peter is very interested in you and desires and asks for a promo kit, which includes your demo tapes of your two new singles. At the same time, you are now booked at the Far East, which you had to postpone the year before or this year in 68 because you were in the Pacific Northwest. But now the contracts are signed for spring 1969. And now in November 13th and 14th in 1968, still, you hang and jam in town in Detroit. This list just
Always, always.
Steve Miller Blues Band, the Moody Blues, and Jefferson Airplane, and also Jimi Hendrix, who your brother, Mickey, Michael Quattro, brought in and booked him,
Right.
and Arthur Brown, no less. And then on November 23rd, you played at Detroit's Crow's Nest, which was
Yes.
very popular. You had played there
There.
before. And on November 27th, which was Thanksgiving, you played a concert with the band Grassroots in
Yep.
Baltimore, Maryland.
Oh my God.
There is just so much going on here. I mean, it's been a whirlwind, Patty. It's been this whole couple of, you got back at end of October, and all of this is going on. And now it's after Thanksgiving, and you've been booked yet again back at Arthur in
Oh
Detroit.
my God. That's when everything happens. The
What do you
shit
mean?
hits the fan.
What do you mean? What do you mean at Arthur?
Kristen, this was huge for all of us, all in the same moment. Late November 1968, Leo and Arlene finally decide to divorce and they call it quits. Leo would be gone as our manager by January, okay? Of course, this final news upset me and the family horribly and the band, but this news totally freaked out our drummer, Dar. She loved Leo. They were close. He had driven her to Slingerland in Chicago to get her drum sponsorship. They got along so well. This was just all too much for her to wrap her head around. It almost did more to affect her than the rest of us who had been living with the coming decisions of Arlene and Leo. We knew it was coming. So, with this sad news, Dar also had her own serious family issues starting to emerge, and all of this put an intense pressure on her entire life. So, after Thanksgiving, Dar played with the Pleasure Seekers for the last time at Arthur in Detroit. And then she was gone.